Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Mem Hei, chapter 45 of the book of Yechezkel. It is a chapter that mixes a continuation of our discussion of the future Beit HaMikdash with sort of what the next or last piece of the Seder of the book of Yechezkel, which is the contours of the future land of Israel. That's the very last piece of it, and it comes up here as well because we're going to talk about a central piece, which will be the configuration of the Beit HaMikdash within the land of Israel, which will change radically and interestingly. So as a prelude, just we need to remind ourselves that when Yechezkel started this vision, so the angel that he was looking at showed him a kaneh, showed him a rod that had six amot in each rod, and each ama was an ama and a tefa, was of the larger sized amot that Chazal had changed. So we saw that, and we noticed it, and we mentioned it. But then in the measurements of the Beit HaMikdash itself, in a lot of cases it was given in amot, so that gave us the chance to forget about the idea of kanim, of these rods. So in this chapter and the coming chapters, these rods will be important. So remember, every time you mention a kaneh, a rod, it is six amot long, and an ama, conservatively, is a foot and a half. So these rods are 9 feet conservatively and 12 feet in the more liberal version of it. So here the parak opens up by saying, V'hapilechem et ha'aretz b'nachala, tarimu tshuma l'Hashem kodesh min ha'aretz, orech chamisha v'esrim elef, orech, V'rocha masara aleph kodeshu b'chol gvula saviv. So when you give out the land as an inheritance, and the Radak points out, the Yechezkel seems to be assuming, Rashi also, because it's clear in the later chapters of Yechezkel, everybody agrees that they're going to reapportion the land of Israel. Whereas the first time when we apportioned the land of Israel, it was by population. So that's a debate actually between Rashi and Ramban as to the definition of by population, but Rashi seems to think it was by numbers specifically, and Ramban seems to think it was by tribe, and then within tribe, by numbers. Whatever it is, it's going to be completely different in the future. It's going to be a set amount of land for each of the tribes, and then the more tribes there are, the more people in a particular tribe, that tribe will get less land per person, but that's the way it's going to go. And so the we'll get to that in a later chapter, chapter Mem Zayin, I think, or Mem Chet, but we'll get that in later chapters. But here it's saying that when you're doing this, when you're giving out the land, b'nachala, you have to take from the land a trumah l'Hashem, a dedicated piece of land for God, kodesh min ha'aretz, and it should be taken out of, separated from the land. And that piece of land that you're going to take out should be orech chamisha v'esrim elef, going to be 25,000 long, verochav asara aleph, and 10,000 wide, kodeshu b'chol gvula saviv, and it's going to be sanctified, holy, all around. This is going to be special for the Beit HaMikdash. Now, with the Radak points out here, well, I mean north to south. Normally, if you look at a map, you would think of its length as being north to south, and width as being east to west, but here, all of the way that Yechezkel expressed it is the other way around. East to west will be length, and north to south will be width. That's because we're putting in portions of the Jewish people. So it's going to be 25,000 kanim long, meaning east to west. 25,000 kanim, I did the math, is, if you think of if you use the conservative version of it, so an ama is only, so a kaneh is only 9 feet, so 10,000 kanim is 16.8 miles. 25,000 kanim is about 42 miles. So 25,000 kanim is 42 miles. So about 42 miles east to west is this strip of land. And then 10,000 kanim, 16 miles north to south. And that's going to be the Kodesh part. That's all going to be Kodesh. So we'll see in Pasuk Bet, Yiyeh Mize El HaKodesh, Chamesh Me'od B'Chamesh Me'od, Meruba Saviv. 500 by 500 of that will be for the Kodesh itself, for Har HaBayit and all that's going on. So I've mentioned in previous chapters, wondering about the size and the need for size because of the masses of people, the numbers of people of Jews there are in the world today. So we see now, at the very least, that there's an assumption it's going to be 500 kanim by 500 kanim. It's going to be 500 by 500. So each of the kanim, again, is 6 amot. So 500 times 6 is 3,000 amot, which is 4,500 to 6,000 feet on a side. So it's going to be a square around the mile, And that's going to be the central, the Har HaBayit, the Kodesh stuff of itself. That's where the amount of room that's going to be. So that is a much larger space than currently is dedicated to it. Umin amida hazot tamod orech chamisha v'esrim elef v'rochav aseret alafim uvo yiyeh hamikdash kodesh kodashim. And then you're going to make a whole strip that's going to be 25,000 long and 10,000 wide, and it will contain within it this Kodesh, this 500 by 500. So the rest, and Rashi may not give you the numbers for the rest, you can figure it out yourself. Kodesh min haaretz hula kohanim misharetei hamikdash yeh. This is going to be an area of land that is going to be for the kohanim who serve in the Beit HaMikdash, HaKarevim L'Sharetet Hashem, V'yalehem Makom L'Vatim U'Mikdash L'Mikdash. They will have a place for houses, and the Mikdash will be for the Mikdash. They will have a place, fairly sizable strip of land. It's going to be 42 miles east to west, and it's going to be 10,000 north to south, subtracting about a mile square within it, will be for the Kohanim to live and to have a place for their houses and to stay. So this is a very radical change. In the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, the tradition was the Levim, including the Kohanim, got 42 cities or 48 cities, if you include the Arei Miklat, scattered throughout Eretz Yisrael. There will still be the Arei Miklat, and those will still be presumably staffed by Levim and Kohanim. But here we're saying there will be this huge area in the center of the land of Israel that will be dedicated for them. That's especially interesting also because our general tradition is that there are 24 Mishmarot of Kohanim and Levim, there are 24 groupings, and each grouping takes a week at a time, and within each week, each grouping, there are subgroupings, and they take a day each, so that the typical Kohen or Levi would work 2 to 3 days in the Beit HaMikdash. So when they were living scattered throughout the land of Israel, you get some of the reason why that happens and how that happens, but in this way of reading it, they'll be living in the center of Israel all the time, even though perhaps they only actively serve, or they're only required to actively serve in the Mikdash on those few days. So it'll be a very different configuration. Pasuk Hey, V'chamisha V'asim Elef Orech V'asaret Lafim Rochav, and then another 25,000 strip of 25,000 east to west and 10,000 north to south from the 16.8 miles. They're going to have a place. That's for the Levi'im, and they're going to have this place here. Assume the Shachot with 20. We normally read Lashachot as offices, but here it presumably means 20 places to live, 20 areas for them, but it's meant for their use. It's meant for, right, Rashi, Radak says, Lashevet Bahem, Hashorim, Kadeshi, Ukrovim, Alabayin, Vashahar, Yelitzar, Kahem, Lavatahem. They'll have places to live close to Beit HaMikdash, and then they'll also have just room to live. This will be their area to live. But thinking about the structure of the land of Israel, if that middle part with the Beit HaMikdash is now dedicated, we've got 42 miles east to west covered for this, and then 33 miles already covered for Kohanim and Levi'im, and then under that, Pasuk Vav, Achuzat Ha'ir Tidnu Chameshet Alafim Rochab, Va'orech Chamisha V'Esvim Elef, Lumat Shumat HaKodesh, L'chol Beit Yisrael Yiyeh. Then there's going to be a place in Yerushalayim, in this central city, that will be below that of the Levim, meaning south of the Levim, and there'll be another 5,000 of these Kanim. So 5,000 Kanim is 30,000 Amot. 30,000 Amot, which is about 8.5, at least 8.5, meaning if it's only 18 inches for an Amah, 8.5 miles north to south, let alone 42 miles east to west, and that will be an area that will be for all of the Shvatim of the Jewish people, all the rest of the Shvatim. The Kohen Levim will have gotten their own. And then there'll be this area for everybody else. And Rashi points out that makes the whole come out to 25,000 by 25,000, Kanim, which is the area that we're going to see for each of the other 12 tribes as well. Meaning there will be 13 parts of the land of Israel in the future that we're imagining, that we're thinking of. And 12 of them will go to the other tribes. This one will go to the Kohanim, some of it, Levim, some of it, and then all of Klal Yisrael will also have a share within the thing. So that's what the Radak points out, that each tribe will have some share in this area, and there will be, in Yerushalayim, every shiv will have a shah, will have a gate of its own. And that's this little piece mentioned in Pasuk Vav is talking about those sharim. Pasuk Zayim, V'lanasim mize u'mize l'chumat ha'kodesh, l'chodzat ha'ir, l'pnei chumat ha'kodesh, So it's a hard pasuk, which seems to me, at least according to the way that Rashi understands it, that you have this area that's 25,000 by 25,000, and that represents a similar share to the other 12 shares. The Nasi, who Rashi assumes and insists is the Kohen Gadol, will get an extra part in the shed that we're talking about. We talk about a shed, a piece of the land that's 25,000 kanim by 25,000 kanim, 25,000 rods by 25,000 rods, 42 by 42 miles. So he assumes, the way to understand this is that that is not going to cover all of the east-west borders of Israel. Israel will be, and this is why it's worth noting, because nowadays Israel is not 42 miles across at every point. Here in the center, in Yerushalayim, we're talking about being 42 miles east to west, and that will still leave room on either side for the Nasi's share, meaning it's 25,000 north to south, and then 25,000 east to west, but on the east-west sides, the king is assumed, or either the king, that's the Radakaz of Melam Mashiach, Rashi does the Kohen, which would leave it for Rashi. If it's all the Kohen Gadol, then you wonder what the role and what the place of Mashiach is, where he has money and land and property and all that, but that's a question that Rashi doesn't answer that we'd have to leave for another time. So this Nasi will take the rest of the width of the land of Israel, what we call the width, the less of, they would call it the length, he will get those as his share in the land, so he'll have plenty of land. And so Hashem says, and this will be the land that he gets, and then he will no longer, the Nisi'im will no longer have to work to get stuff from the Jews, to collect lots of taxes, to try to defraud them, try to cheat them out of their land. They will have enough land. So for the Radak, it's like Radak says, as kings used to have to do, they would steal and they would force and they would take from the poor because they needed the money to line their coffers. And so this is assuming, and then the Radak says, now it's not only that they'll have more land this time, but it's also because they'll have a Lev Chadash, they'll have a new spirit, a new attitude, and therefore they won't take from him anymore anyway. But in the Radak, you understand it because it's the king. I think it's the easier way to read it. But for Rashi, for whom is the Kohen Gadol, it would seem to me something like they won't need money and therefore they won't have to try to get the Jews to donate things to the Beit HaMikdash anymore or something like that. So they'll have this land. So it's not only that there'll be some land left over after this 22 miles east to west, is that there will be enough land left over that on a piece of land 42 miles north to south and then whatever it is east to west will be enough to support the king or the Kohen Gadol in such a style that they will not feel the need, aside from the fact that they'll be more religious and more ethical and more moral and all that comes, what's supposed to come with the recognition of Hashem, but they will no longer feel the need to try to get more from their fellow Jews. And as the parak goes on, we'll see that there will be many financial responsibilities to being this Nasi, either the Melech HaMashiach, either the King, or the Kohen Gadol. So, Pasuk Tet, Kolomar Hashem Elokim, Rav Lachem Nesiei Yisrael, Chamas Vashod Hasiru. So this is really addressed to the Nesiim now. So remove from amongst you the chamas and the shod, your robbery and your stealing from people, and instead do real justice. Harimu gerushotechem me'al ami. So stop evicting people. This is something we haven't seen so much of before reference, but harimu gerushotechem, stop evicting people. So the Radak thinks that it means the taxes, because that it means the taxes they used to gather and collect from them. Whereas Rashi thinks, no, that they literally kick people off of their land and start weighing and doing weights and measures properly and appropriately. So make sure that each of your measuring cups, each of the things that you use to measure, has exactly the right amount and the proper amounts in it. And so the Eifa and the Bat are good examples, because the Eifa weighs dry, does dry measures, and Bat does liquid measures, and they're supposed to have the same in them, so you have to make sure that actually works out. Vashekel esrim gira, esrim shkalim, chamisha v'esrim shkalim, asara v'chamisha shekel hamana yelachem, and make sure that your shekel weighs 20 gira like it's supposed to, and 20 shkalim, twenty shkalim and fifteen shkalim should make sure to make up a mana. So the JPS English notes that this mana that we're talking about is a 60 mana coin or 60 mana measurement. And the point would be, it's not clear how we're saying it or why we're saying it in this way, but the point is to make sure that your shkalim add up in your weight of silver to make sure that it comes up to the right thing. And so then this also fuels Chazal's understanding that the weights and measures were adjusted in the time of Yecheskel here with the Shkalim. So they assume from here the Shkalim is really double what it is in the Mikdash and double what it is outside, and that they also added to it in time of Yecheskel. Pasuk Gimel Zota Terima Shetarimu Sheshita Ifa Mechomer HaChitim Veshishitem Ha'ifa Mechomer HaSe'orim. You should take a sixth of an Ifa of Chitim and a sixth of an Ifa from barley. V'chok HaShemen. So that's the Truma that you're going to take for chinuch habayit. When you're going to make a korban, this is the way the Radak has it, that is in terms of making a chinuch habayit, a dedication of the Beit HaMikdash. So you're going to take you're going to take this for a dedication. Rashi just thinks we're talking about in general the requirements of truma and challah, and 1 in 60 is the minimum amount, and that's what it's talking about. In a shishit haifa, Rashi says 1 in 60. V'chok Hashemen habat Hashemen ma'asar habat min akor aseret habatim chomer ki aseret habatim chomer. You can take a liquid oil measured by the bat, you'll take the amount that you take v'seachah min atzon and 1 sheep min hamatayim mimashkei Yisrael mincha ula'olam lishlamim l'chaper alihem nu'um Hashem Elokim. You're going to take one animal from every 200, right? And the point of these offerings is to make sure that you give the right offerings. This is Pasuk Yud Dalad that I'm in now. So the Radak says, V'chok Hashem, V'chok HaTrumah, Hashem LeMincha. Right? The Mincha was Bulu Hashem, so how much do you have to take? So you take 10 Batim of Chomer, meaning that would be 10 Batim of Chomer. So these are the korbanot that you're going to offer. You're going to offer 1 sem min atzon kol ama. Now, Pasuk Ted Zion moves us into the haftarah for Parashat HaChodesh, right, which is read just before Rosh Chodesh Nisan every year, and it talks about the future dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, which is described as happening on the first of Nisan. So these korbanot that we've been talking about, the mincha and the shemen and the seh, so these are leading into this discussion. Kolami harei to yol ha'truma hazot l'nasi b'Yisrael, and everybody is supposed to join in this contribution. V'alanasi yeh pasuk yudzayim v'alanasi yeh ha'olot v'amincha v'anesach b'chagim v'chadashim v'shabbatot b'chol moadei b'Yisrael. Who yaser ha'chatar v'amincha v'ta'ula v'tashlamim l'chaper b'ad b'Yisrael. So this is a striking change, that in the future the assumption is that the nasi, and again for Rashi the nasi is the Kohen Gadol, and for Radak the Nasi is the king, and it's saying that the king or the Kohen Gadol, Rashi knows that Rabbeinu Menachem, the Menachem thinks it's the king, and he thinks it's nonetheless the Kohen Gadol, and what they're saying is that they'll provide these korbanot. So that's I think a huge financial responsibility, but it also changes the relationship to the Beit HaMikdash. And it's interesting that it's not every day, it's on the Chagim, the Chadashim, the Shabbatot, all of the holidays. So that's going to be a time when a lot of the Jews gather together, and we'll see in coming Prakim that it may be that other days of the week were not so full of, the Beit HaMikdash was not so full of Jews, or was not expected to be in the future so full of Jews. And then that would already suggest that the reason why the Nasi is being told to give these offerings is because there's some impact that the Navi is looking for the Nasi's giving these offerings to have on the people who gather. Meaning, I think, or I would suggest, or I would guess, that to see your korbanot being given, or to be involved in your korbanot being given, or to be contributing to your korbanot being given, so that is one way in which you can experience Hashem. But here it seems to be that they're being told to experience it differently. They're being told to experience it differently. They're being told that they will come to the Beit HaMikdash. This is the time when people will gather. And they will gather at the Beit HaMikdash for a holiday. And yet the korbanot that they are offering on that holiday will not be their korbanot that they can look up and say, oh look, I gave this korban, I gave that korban, it's all mine. They're being taught, or they're going to be taught, or they're going to have to learn that in fact the korbanot that they are being given do not come from, but they come from the nasi. So that distance from the service seems to me to be a big change and an important change, because it's telling them something about the relationship to the Beit HaMikdash. When they come for the chagim, they're coming from the Hashem, but it's not the same kind of intimacy as they once had, it would seem to me. Pasuk Yudchet, Kol Amar Hashem Elokim Barishon V'Echad HaChodesh, that the first of Nisan, Tikach Par Ben Bakar Tamim V'Chiteit Ad HaMikdash, you're going to take a par, you're going to take a bull and offer it in terms of a chatat for dedicating the Beit HaMikdash. V'Lakach HaKoyim Midam HaChatat V'Natan El Mezuzat HaBayid V'El Arba Pinot HaAzara Al HaMizbeach, he's going to take from the Dam of the Chatat and he's going to give it on Mezuzot HaBayid, on the doorposts of the Beit HaMikdash itself, and then also the four corners of the Mizbeach, right? We spoke before about the Azara of the Mizbeach, of the Al Mezuzat Shara Chatar Pinamid, and also on the doorway of the outer courtyard. You're going to do it also on the 7th of the month. The assumption is that it's all 7 days of the month. Me'ish Shoge Amipeti V'chipartem Et HaBayit. So this Pasuk of Pasuk Chaf is the third of a series of Pesukim that were very difficult. First, they're very difficult in terms of the fact that we speak here of a Chatat, and yet in general we would think that you're giving an Olah. Secondly, it's a problem because we don't know if these korbanot necessarily that were determined by Hashem in specific. And then the Pasuk Chaf is talking about a different kind of a korban. It's talking about a korban that you can give on the 7th of the month. So usually you don't give another chata on the 7th of the month. The Rosh Chodesh you give a chatas, but not just randomly on the 7th of the month give a chatas. And then in addition to which, the Mi'ish Shogeh Umipeti, it sounds like it's a korban for having done something b'shogeg. So the various answers. First, I would just note that the Gemara says about these psukim that Eliyahu is atid l'dorsham in Menachot Daf Mem and Aleph. The Gemara says that Rabbi Yochanan says Eliyahu has come do it. Rav Ashi says no, we don't need Eliyahu. These are just miluim, and they gave these miluim in the time of Ezra. And the Radak understands that. And the Rambam in Hilchos Maaseh Karbanot says miluim or karbanot you give once in history at a time, and they can be a matter of Horat Sha'a, I mean a matter of the Nevi'im telling you what to bring, but they don't stay as examples of Korbanot into the future. They're not specific Korbanot determined by Hashem to always be given in any kind of regular way, and that's what's being referred to here, and that's what's going on here. So that would at least solve that problem or that issue. Then the Radak says, though, also the fact that it's being given 7 days, because out of the celebration and the happiness, they're going to offer these korbanot for 7 days. So there is some idea here that these are korbanot, communal korbanot, that are sort of self-initiated or allowed to be self-initiated, and the people are able to just say, Yechezkel is predicting it, and Yechezkel is telling you that it's okay, that it's allowed, but that there's going to be room to just offer korbanot as a sign of celebration, and they don't have to be as specifically defined by the Torah as to what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, what is important, what is not important, what is allowed, and what is not allowed. I'll also point out that in terms of saying that this is going to happen all on the 1st of Nisan, Radak says, first of the first is Nisan, and he thinks it's a proof. There's a machloket in the Gemara, and the answer is whether the Jews will be redeemed from exile in Nisan or in Tishrei. And he says there's a proof that it's in Nisan. And then he says, though, because if they're going to have the Geula in Tishrei, if they're going to have the redemption in Tishrei, why would they wait 6 months to have this dedication in Nisan? But then he says, almost in the next breath, he says, it doesn't mean that Nisan they'll go out of exile in Nisan, but they'll go out of exile beforehand, and then they'll come to Israel until the point that by the first of Nisan, the Binyan HaBayit, the construction of the Beit HaMikdash, will have been completed, and then they will have the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash in Nisan. So I just point out that in saying that, and I don't think he's wrong at all, I think he's absolutely right, but in saying that, he takes away the whole ability of this verse, of these ideas, to be a proof for Rabbi Yoshua or for Rabbi Eliezer, because if what we're saying is that this will be the culmination of a process, so then it seems to be true that you have to agree the culmination of the Geula in terms of a rededication of Beit HaMikdash will happen in Nisan. But when we talk about B'Nisan Nigalu, B'Nisan Hatitin Nigael, that we were originally redeemed in Nisan, and that will happen again in the future, so is that what that debate was about? It seems to me plausible anyway, that debate was about about when will the beginning of the Geula take place, or when will some other marker event of the redemption take place. Meaning, why? I think there's a certain logic to say that the what we mean by redemption is when it's finally complete, and when it's only finally complete once the Beit HaMikdash is constructed, right? That's why B'lishlam Yerchav Rachamim Tashuv, we say in davening that the Binyan Yerushalayim, so then the next bracha is you have to bring Malchus David. So we say that the Binyan of Yerushalayim, the rebuilding of Jerusalem, is not complete until you have a return to a Davidic king. But that being true, then, and the Davidic king will rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, and that's why we have in the bracha, that's why we mentioned the kingship of David in the bracha in benching in Birkat HaMazon of Bonei Yerushalayim, because, and there were versions, right? I heard a tape recently of Rav Yoel ben Nun, in which he pointed out that there were versions of benching which said, something Beit David, Uvonei Yerushalayim, that the bracha in benching that mentions Binyan Yerushalayim, the rebuilding of Jerusalem, mentions a return to a Davidic kingship as well, because that might be an essential part of it. So it might all be part of it. So the question is, what do we mean by Nisan or Tishrei as being the dent? Do we mean that somebody will come into being king in Nisan or in Tishrei? Do we mean the beginning of the process will happen then, or some other event will have occurred? So that's a very interesting question that the Radak raises for us just by the way. Pasuk of Aleph Barishon Ba'arba'asar Yom Lachodesh Yelachem HaPasach Chag Shavuot Yomim Matzot Yechen L'Gehav Chag HaPesach. This will be soon after the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, and it will be 7 days of eating matzah v'asah ha'nasi v'yomahu ba'adova kol ha'am ha'aretz par chatat, and he will do a chatat as we always do on a, although I think in general we usually we in the Torah spoke of it not being as a par chatat but being a sirizim echad l'chatat, but a par being done on those korbanot. So Rashi here points out when he says this that the Gemara mentions that they wanted to maybe bury the book of Yecheskel or hide it away because they didn't know what to do about it, because Shayu Dvarav Sotrim Divrei Torah, because the book of Yecheskel seems to contradict the words of the Torah. And then Chananya ben Chizkiah ben Goron is Zochel Atov, because he went up to an attic and he stayed there. We've mentioned this before earlier in the book. But he figured it out, and he figured out all the contradictions, and he resolved all the contradictions. So Rashi says, and in our Bavoninu Netlamimenu Mashidarash Bekarbonot Ayila, but we don't have any tradition as to what he said about these korbanot, such as this par. So Rashi says, I think this par comes instead of the Egel ben Bakar Sheikriv Aharon Bashmini Lamiluim, and then on the eighth day of the Miluim, Aharon had a special korban, and this is instead of that korban in case they didn't do it. So that's an in case korban. It's a difficult thing. The whole tradition of Chananya ben Chizkiah ben Goron is interesting because even in the Gemara's time, they don't mention the answer that the Gemara doesn't mention the answer that he gave. So it's almost as if it's a story in which the answers are less important than the fact that the answers occurred. The fact that we know that Chananya ben Chizkiah ben Goron went up to the Aliyah and he found the answers, and there are stories in the Gemara of people who visited him and they have votes there. It's a very important incident in the Gemara's view of Jewish history. It's almost the fact that there were the answers is more important than the answers themselves. The answers themselves we've lost. But we know that there were answers. That's why we learned the book of Yecheskel, and that's why even if we come across something in Yecheskel that is difficult and problematic, we can say, okay, but we know there's an answer, and that's why Chazal let this book stay in Tanakh, and that's why, and so that we can be confident this is a book that in some way fits with proper and appropriate Jewish faith. So you have this on the par. V'shivat yimei achag yaseh olah l'Hashem, shivat parim, shivat elim, Timim layom shivat hayamim v'chatat zirizim layom. And then for 7 days of the holiday, he makes an olah of 7 parim. So we in our Torah don't think it's 7 parim. We think it's 1 par. That's what Rashi says. V'atara amra. I'm sorry, 2 parim for a day. V'atara amra parim ben avakar shnayim v'ayel chad. So he says, I don't know what to do with this. So I think shiva parim v'shiva ilim for 7 days. A par for each day and an aisle for each day. And it comes to tell you, why does it only mention 1 par? To tell you that the parim are not me'akvim zedzen. That's based on the Gemara as well. It's coming to teach you that if for some reason the Jews ran out of parim, ran out of bulls, and they can only bring one, that's also acceptable, and that's why he refers to it in this way. So that's, I think, an answer, but I think it's a difficult answer, and I think it's an answer whose difficulties are clear, that we don't understand fully what's going on here, but it is a halakhic reality that it's an important one to know and to keep in mind. that we could, not important to keep in mind so much, but that, that teaches us a lesson on how to run the Beit HaMikdash. Pasuk of Dala, Mincha, Eifa LaPar, Ve'Eifa La'ayel Yaseh, V'Shem Min Hin La'Eifa, and you have Menachot that go on with these Korbanot. You have an Eifa for the Par, an Eifa for the Ayel, and each Eifa should get a Hin of Shemen, of oil. Bashavi Bachavisha Sayom LaChodesh Becha, Yaseh Chayel Shiva Yamim, Kachata Ka'ula V'Chamincha V'Cha Shaman. And then on the 7th month, on the 15th of the month, which is Sukkot, so you're going to have similar korbanot. Now that's also very striking, very worth noticing, because it's very different. Our general understanding of Sukkot is very different to the korbanot, as the Radak points out. First of all, he says this will also be a chidush, so the Radak is going his own way, thinking that much of the structure of korbanot will change in Yimot HaMashiach. And then he says in Sukkot it's also much more different, because what the Torah says about Sukkot is that every day has a different number of parim, and this seems to have the same number for each of the 7 days, and then the Radak says, but it doesn't mention Shmini Atzeret at all, so maybe Shmini Atzeret will have the same korbanot. So if you're going to follow this Radak, it seems like the Radak is willing to accept the possibility that numbers of the korbanot, the amounts of animals to offer in the korbanot, was not such an incontrovertible part of Torah, right? We've noticed before that there are some mitzvot, at least in the Radak's reading, the Radak's understanding, there are some mitzvot which are not as uncontrovertibly defined, meaning that their definition of how to be observed is not as rigid as would seem from the Torah, and that changing them, or the way we observe them, is not in fact change. It doesn't qualify as change. It's not a violation of the Torah or doing violence to what the Torah originally wanted. So if that's true, and that would seem to be here true of number of korbanot, because Radak is not offended or bothered by the fact that we're going to change the numbers of korbanot. That's an interesting, I would put that into context, it reminds me of the fact that the Rambam says, when he comes in the towards the end of the Mor Nevuchim, the Rambam wants to define and explain the numbers of the Ta'amei HaMitzvot. It's important to the Rambam to make clear that there are reasons for mitzvot, but then when he's doing that, he says, although I want to give you an exception, I am not going to attempt, the Rambam says, to define for you the reasons behind details of the mitzvot. So if you see, and the example he gives is, you see numbers of korbanot, I'm not going to define it for you. That's a complicated, difficult claim of his, because you'd think the numbers have some meaning, because if they didn't have any meaning, why would Hashem choose this number over that number? Would it really just be random? And if it's going to be random, why not just make it one of everything? Which is, in fact, what you start having here in Yecheskel, which is just one of everything. So why not do that? Why not do that everywhere? So the Rambam doesn't answer that question. The Rambam just does what he does, and he goes off and he does it as well as the Rambam does everything. But if you see this Radak being calm and comfortable about a switch in the numbers of korbanot, it is suggestive that perhaps the Radak just felt numbers of korbanot isn't that interesting, because after all, the Rambam just said it has to be some number, so Hashem chose some number, so it's fairly random, so if I see Yecheskel changing it, it's not that big a deal. So Radak doesn't say that, so I can't tell you that's what the Radak was saying, but it is an interesting speculation. I think it's an interesting speculation, which is why I'm sharing it with you. So what you have in the chapter, though, is you have an introduction to, and this will be picked up in future chapters, you have an introduction to the vision of the shape of Eretz Yisrael in the future, a very different shape than we have today, and a much larger plot of land than we have today. I don't mean to be political. I don't mean to tell you how we're going to get to it. We'll take that up in chapters 47, 48, but a 42-mile-wide plot of land with some room on the sides of east-west to make a share for the Nasi that is big enough that he won't feel the urge or the need to collect taxes or money from the rest of the Jewish people, even though it will be his job to give menachot and korbanot for Shabbatot and Kodashim and Moadim. So that's a vision of a large piece of land. Also, the structure of Eretz Yisrael changing, because the center will be occupied by a central city of Yerushalayim, and that central city of Yerushalayim will have in it a mile-by-mile, basically, Beit HaMikdash area, Har HaBayit area. Then it will have 42 miles east to west and 16 miles north to south, except for the Beit HaMikdash for Kohanim. Similar for the Levi'im, and then a smaller plot of land, than 8 miles north to only 8 miles north to south, 42-mile-wide plot of land for all of the tribes to share as part of their share of Jerusalem, That'll be the center of the city, and then you'll have a rededication ceremony, as we saw today, and that rededication ceremony will seem to have different halachic practices or different applications of certain halachot in ways that were challenging to Chazal way back in the time of the Mishnah, and that challenge us today, and then you have the realm or the spectrum of responses as to whether you think that there will be change of these issues in the future, as we've spoken about the possibility that some mitzvot, even though they're defined by certain practices, are really more less rigid than that and more fluid than that, or according to Rashi, that you just put them all together and you find ways in which they actually fit and you fit them into the text however you fit them. So all of these issues, some of these issues will continue for us in the last three chapters of the book of Yechezkel as we proceed. Have a great day.